Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Friday, September 17th, 2021. Front page. Direct flights to Austin returning, by Stuart Doreen. Southwest Airlines has announced that direct service from Midland to Austin will return in March. The Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN, actually broke the news Thursday morning, but the airlines confirmed the announcement, stating on its website that service to and from Texas's capital will return for the first time since 2009. It is part of greater service, 46 nonstop flights out of Austin. Midland is one of two Texas cities to receive the direct flights. Amarillo is the other. The announcements Thursday also means that Southwest, in March, will fly directly out of Midland International Airport to five cities: Dallas, Houston, Las Vegas, Denver, and Austin. Southwest reports that, as of June, it has nine direct flights in and out of Midland daily, including four to Dallas Love Field. Justine Ruff, director of airports with the city, stated Thursday that tentative schedule for the flights include a departure out of Midland at 6:30 a.m., arriving in Austin at 7:30 a.m. The return flight is scheduled to leave Austin at 7:50 p.m., arriving in Midland at 8:55 p.m. "This is exciting news," Ruff said. "We are thrilled." The announcement happened Thursday morning as the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance provided news of a successful outcome of an initiative it has been working on for years. That effort included a 2019 event at the Petroleum Museum, where some of the most influential members of the political and business community from Midland and Odessa put the region's best foot forward, with the hope of convincing Southwest Airlines to add the direct flight between the capital of America's most significant oil patch, Midland, and the state capital, Austin. Speakers at that event included Nadine Craddock, Lorraine Perryman, James Beacham, and Ray Perryman. As conveyed in the Reporter Telegram at that time, they conveyed the message of the region's importance to the Texas and national economy and the expectation of uninterrupted growth for Southwest officials in attendance. "We are thrilled," said Beacham, president of MOTRAN, in an email Thursday about the addition of a direct flight. "I think most people will never understand how many conversations were taking place behind the scenes. We need to thank our partners at the Midland and Odessa Development Corporations for supporting our work to share the data and information needed, Lorraine and Dr. Perryman for helping host Southwest and his economic modeling, and finally, Nadine Craddock, who has been in continued contact even through a pandemic so that Southwest Airlines never forgot that we're out here." Beacham later told the Reporter Telegram that Midland got the flight because of the amount of business travel that takes place and what the business traveler means to the economic model of the airline industry. State Representative Tom Craddock said the direct flight just makes sense for the people of Midland, Odessa, and others around the Permian Basin. "The Permian Basin is the largest oil field in the world," Craddock said in a statement. "We generate over 10% of all state revenues, and we have numerous citizens who must travel back and forth to the seat of state government to conduct business. This just makes sense. I want to thank Southwest Airlines for recognizing the contributions of the Permian Basin and their continued efforts to provide service to the residents of the Permian Basin for 45 years. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton added, "As Midland and the Permian Basin continue to lead the world as the most secure oil and gas producing region on the globe, it is great news to see Southwest begin to expand offerings. We are grateful for all that have been working toward these improvements. As we know, abundant and dependable air travel is essential for our continuing growth." Southwest in Midland. Service began on May 20, 1977. Seventh city in Southwest system. Current cities served out of Midland: Dallas, Houston, Las Vegas, and Denver. 9 departures a day, including 4 to Dallas. Ground operations employees, 39. Flight to Austin, scheduled to begin in March. Departure from Midland, 6:30 a.m. Departure from Austin, 7:50 p.m. Last direct flight from Austin, 2009. Source, Southwest Airlines. COVID therapy likely to be rationed. Leaders expect less treatments to be sent to area. By Stuart Doreen. The U.S. government plans to control where COVID-19 antibody treatments are sent, and that means there will be fewer infusions provided in Midland and Odessa. That was the news from Midland Health CEO and President Russell Myers on Thursday during a news conference. He said while Regeneron monoclonal antibody infusions have been very successful in keeping people out of the hospital, the availability to markets will change. He referenced reports, like a Bloomberg article earlier this week, that stated hospitals and other care providers will no longer be able to directly order monoclonal antibody therapies from distributors, according to a September 13th update posted on the Department of Health and Human Services website. Instead, the U.S. government will determine what quantity of the drugs to ship to each state and territory based on COVID-19 case numbers and use of the treatments locally, the Bloomberg article stated. State health departments will then determine how to distribute the antibody therapies to hospitals and other sites, according to the HHS update. And so, while we've been able to get a meaningful allocation of Regeneron week after week for some period of time, those days are coming to an end right now, Meyer said, and we don't know when our next supply will be available. So accordingly, we're going to have to tighten our criteria for giving Regeneron to make sure that we give it to the people who can benefit from it most, those who are at the highest risk. Myers said, effective immediately, the hospital has gone back to earlier criteria that were tighter. For people age 50 and older, those with a body mass index over 35, or those having other comorbid conditions. Rod Huber, assistant fire chief, EMS for Odessa Fire Rescue, and a leader of the incident command team in Odessa, stated he is concerned and frustrated by the news as well. He said more than 1,000 infusions have been provided in around a month. Midland Memorial has provided more than 1,260 in the months it has provided the therapy, according to Myers, but that number had increased recently to around 40 a day. He said that daily count should drop as the hospital had around 100 available on Thursday. As the demand increased, we've broadened our criteria to give it to more people because we know it works, Myers said. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to give that many going forward, so we will essentially be rationing Regeneron to only the highest risk patient population, and 40 a day won't be our number going forward. Myers said the last tracking the hospital performed showed 7% of patients who were giving an infusion eventually had to be hospitalized, and those were patients who are known to be positive and known to be high risk. Bloomberg reported earlier this week that under the most recent distribution mechanism, the largest shipments were sent to Florida, Texas, Georgia, and Mississippi, according to data provided in the government announcement. Bloomberg cited the HHS when it wrote, "A rise in infections caused by the Delta variant has caused a substantial surge in the utilization of monoclonal antibody, MAB, drugs, particularly in areas of the country with low vaccination rates." The agency stated it is committed to helping ensure consistent availability of these crucial drugs for current and future patients in all geographic areas of the country. Pfluger holds Second Amendment rally with Representative Lauren Boebert. By Caitlin Randall. U.S. Representative August Pfluger held a Second Amendment rights rally at Alley Outdoors in Midland on Thursday with fellow freshman congressional member Lauren Boebert of Colorado. Pfluger said in an interview that he wants to host a rally with Boebert because she's a gun rights activist and they've both signed on to pieces of legislation regarding Second Amendment rights. She's a champion for that issue, and I want to make sure that people here in Midland, Texas, and throughout Texas, know that there's many people fighting these battles, that we're doing it together as a team, and that we're going to protect that right for all Americans, he said. The congressman pointed to President Joe Biden's nomination to lead the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms as evidence of the administration's intention to limit the Second Amendment. Biden had nominated David Chipman, a senior policy advisor for the gun control group Giffords. The White House withdrew Chipman from consideration last week. Pfluger also said Democrats are introducing legislation every single day to limit gun rights, such as House Resolution 5717, which would raise taxes on firearms to 30%, among other things. That bill has not moved forward since it was introduced in January 2020. Enough is enough, Pfluger said. This is a constitutional right, and we're going to continue to fight a war. Boebert, who owns a restaurant in Rifle, Colorado, called Shooter's Grill, where staff open carry, touched on several other topics during the rally besides gun rights. She criticized Biden's tyrannical authoritarian regime, his policies on immigration and Afghanistan, and his administration's decision to put fences around the U.S. Capitol building, which Boebert called the People's House. There are so many issues that come up, even in a Second Amendment rally, because that is what the Second Amendment protects, Boebert said in an interview. It protects us against all of this tyranny, all of this authoritarianism that we are seeing right now in America. If we want the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, we have to make sure we have a way to secure that, she said. Boebert also told the crowd of about 100 people that she had drafted articles of impeachment for Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, and she intends to introduce those on the House floor when Congress is back in session. She declined in an interview to say what offenses she would be accusing Biden and Harris of, but said dereliction of duty would be one of the articles. Pfluger said he was waiting for investigations to be finished and evidence to be presented before he decides if he will vote for impeachment. Unlike Democrats, we take impeachment very serious, he said. This is the most important thing that somebody in Congress, elected by the people, can do. We're gathering evidence right now. There will be accountability.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the MRT for Friday. ECISD's supply of COVID-19 tests expires. By Caitlin Randall. Ector County ISD is currently not doing COVID-19 testing for staff or students after their supply of tests expired over the weekend, Superintendent Scott Murray said during a call with reporters on Wednesday. Murray said they've ordered additional tests and are waiting on them to be shipped from the state. Many districts' tests expired at the same time, causing delays in shipments, he said. The state has millions of tests available. We're just waiting on that shipment, much like other districts across the state, he said. All of these tests expired at the same time, and so we are waiting on new tests from the state. The district's inability to do COVID-19 testing has caused the number of reported cases to drop. The number of positive cases district-wide fell from 40 to 60 a day last week to about 30 a day this week. The positive cases the district is continuing to report this week are coming from local doctors or parents who are self-reporting, according to Murray. We know because we have been testing students and staff members every single day at school that our inability to do that right now has resulted in lower test numbers, he said. Murray said they do not yet know when a new shipment of tests will arrive. Even before the COVID-19 tests expired, ECISD's positive cases were on a downward trend. Murray said positives dropped from a high of 110 cases in one day 2 weeks ago to about 80 cases a day, then down to 40 to 60 cases a day last week. Some of the highest reported cases have been at Permian High School and Odessa High School, where 189 cases and 180 cases have been reported since August 4th, respectively. Murray also said on Wednesday that they are not requiring vaccines for staff after President Biden's sweeping vaccine mandates last week, which included a rule that any company with more than 100 employees must require vaccines. That rule would be enforced through regulations from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Since Texas does not have a state OSHA plan, those regulations can't be enforced for Texas school districts. At this time, we're continuing to monitor decisions that are made at both the state and the federal level, but as of today, there have been no changes in our protocols, Murray said. A Midland ISD spokesperson did not immediately respond to a Reporter Telegram inquiry regarding the status of the district's COVID-19 testing supply. MISD's positive cases have also been trending downward, from 348 cases reported the week of August 30th to 162 cases reported last week. Midland Shared Spaces Hosting Dueling Pianos by J.C. Lewis. Midland Shared Spaces, Inc. will host Rhythm and Booze, a dueling piano event, on September 23rd. The event will include a performance by professional piano players and entertainers Felix and Fingers. MSS Executive Director Autumn Vest said in a statement, "Our priority is to keep everyone safe while having a good time. We have added additional precautions for Rhythm and Booze in order to create a safe experience. This is a challenging time, and we want to be a positive force for the health of our community." Additional COVID precautions include tent size increased to allow for more space between tables, open air tent to allow for airflow, servers to wear masks and gloves, and hand sanitizer stations available. Vest added, "If anyone has any questions about our efforts to provide a safe evening, please contact me at 432-685-0404. The proceeds from the event go toward the organization's mission to enhance nonprofit efficiency, provide affordable workspace and back office services, and foster collaborations that better serve nonprofits and the people of Midland County. All tickets include entertainment, food, and an open bar. General admission tickets are $100. Sponsorship opportunities are available and include reserved seating, commemorative pint glasses, and underwriting opportunities." Whataburger and HEB to honor West Texas Food Bank by J.C. Lewis. The Midland Rockhounds will support the West Texas Food Bank during Hunger Action Month. Friday during the Rockhounds game, spectators are invited to wear orange, the color of hunger, and cheer on the Rockhounds and the West Texas Food Bank team alongside their partner agencies. The WTFB and partner agencies are on the front lines for distributing food in the 19 counties the West Texas Food Bank serves. HEB will present a check on behalf of the community who were invited to give at the HEB registers, and Whataburger will be spreading orange love as they cheer on their partnership with the WTFB to promote feeding students' success. Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Friday. Aaron Moreno, 24, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, September 7th. He was born in Midland on May 2, 1997. Aaron is survived by his son Zayden Carter Moreno, his parents Jose and Myrna Moreno, brother Axel Moreno, sister Amarani Moreno, nephews, paternal grandmother Concepcion Moreno, maternal grandparents Jesus and Maria Hernandez, and several aunts, uncles, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his grandfather Armando L. Moreno and uncle Valentin Moreno. Viewing will be at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home starting Saturday, September 18th at 10 a.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. A funeral mass will be held at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine on Monday, September 20th at 10 a.m. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Billy Farrell Winkler, 93, of Odessa, passed away on Tuesday, September 14th, in Odessa. Billy was welcomed into heaven by his beautiful wife of 52 years, Lenora, his dad and mom, Frank and Zora Winkler. Also welcoming him was his three sisters and seven brothers. He is survived by his son David and wife Donna Winkler of Menard, and daughter Brenda and husband Cliff Martin, and son Rowdy Winkler, all of Odessa. He is survived by 12 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. Visitation will be from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, September 17th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend Aubrey Jones officiating, assisted by Jeff Clear. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Keith Ray Job, 73, passed away on September 9th. Keith was born in Midland to Lloyd Ray Job and Mabel Irene Layton Job on June 14, 1948. Keith was preceded in death by his parents, brother James William Job, great-nephew Blake Cole, and father-in-law Norman Zachary. He is survived by his wife Norma Zachary Job, children Mark Job, John Davis, and Louise Davis, mother-in-law Vera Zachary, brother Jerry Job, and wife Sue. Seven grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and great-nieces and nephews. Visitation will be Friday, September 17th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Willowbrook Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside services with full military honors will be held at 9 a.m. Saturday, December 18th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. A celebration of Keith's life will follow at 11 a.m. at Living Way Four Square Church in Midland, with Pastor John Wymore officiating. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Ruth Jo Edwards, 100, of Midland, passed away on September 12th. Viewing will be held at 12 p.m. until 9 p.m. Friday, September 17th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Funeral service will be 2 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, at the First Baptist Church Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Jo was born August 3, 1921, in Mineola, Texas, to William and Katie Shirey. Survivors include her son, James Jim Edwards, and wife Carmen of Midland. She was mama to five grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and three step-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, C.M. Edwards, a son, Larry Bruce Edwards, a daughter, Nancy Elizabeth Edwards, a grandson, Patrick Quest, and her three sisters, whom she dearly loved. The family suggests memorials be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, or to Buckner Baptist Children's Home, 700 North Pearl Street, Suite 1200, Dallas, Texas, 75210. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Billy Loper, age 85, of Midland, passed away September 5th. Cremation services have been arranged. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Loper family at this time. Joe Bryant, 64, of Stanton, passed away September 14th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, September 20th, at the branch at NPW. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Chandra Eileen Eppinger, age 54, of Midland, passed away September 4th. Cremation services have been arranged. Chandra is survived by a sister, Angie Eppinger, of Midland. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Eppinger family at this time.
This is the oil and energy page. Chevron CEO warns of high energy prices and supply crunches, by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. The world is facing high energy prices for the foreseeable future as oil and natural gas producers resist the urge to drill again, according to Chevron Corporation's top executive. There are things that are interfering with market signals right now that we haven't seen before. Eventually, things work out, but eventually can be a long time, Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth said Wednesday in an interview at Bloomberg News headquarters in New York. He expects strong prices for gas, liquefied natural gas, and oil, at least for a while, without specifying a time frame. Even though oil and gas prices have surged this year as the world recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic, major producers have been reluctant to invest their cash in new projects, a shift in behavior from previous upswings. That's leading to concerns of shortages. Already, Europe is facing its worst natural gas crunch in decades, with prices rising to record levels even before winter, when demand is typically at the strongest. One reason executives are wary to plow investment dollars into new supply is shareholders haven't shown they're in their corner. They want cash returned to them immediately, rather than seeing it reinvested in new developments. Although soaring commodity markets are signaling we could invest more, equity prices are sending boardrooms a different sign, Wirth said. There are two signals I'm looking for, and I'm only seeing one of them right now, he said. We could afford to invest more. The equity market is not sending a signal that says they think we ought to be doing that. Some investors are unwilling to back new projects after oil and gas companies wasted billions of dollars on low-return operations over the past decade. Others are watching signs of climate change and trying to gauge whether companies are making changes fast enough. The risks are real. Royal Dutch Shell was ordered to reduce carbon emissions by 45% by 2030 by a Dutch court earlier this year, and ExxonMobil Corporation was forced to backtrack on an aggressive expansion plan amid COVID-19 and shareholder unrest. You've got some real new dynamics, whether it's government policy, efforts to constrain capital into the industry, to make it harder for the industry to access capital markets, Wirth said. That, in the short term, could create some risk for the global economy. Chevron, the second largest Western oil major, is unlikely to buck the trend and chase new production, despite having the strongest financial position among its peers. It slashed its capital spending by almost a third last year and, unusually, pledged to maintain it at low levels right the way through 2025. An announcement earlier this week to boost spending on energy transition technologies reverses just a portion of those cuts. When new projects do come to the table, their future emissions are a big part of our decision-making process, Wirth said. Chevron has pledged to reduce its emissions intensity progressively over the coming decades, suggesting that higher carbon operations, such as oil sands, may find it harder to receive the green light. There may be some relief for oil prices, at least in the short term. Democrats call oil giants to testify on climate campaign, by Matthew Daly, Associated Press, Washington. Congressional Democrats are calling top executives at ExxonMobil and other oil giants to testify at a House hearing as lawmakers investigate what they say is a long-running, industry-wide campaign to spread disinformation about the role of fossil fuels in causing global warming. The House Oversight Committee on Thursday requested that executives at ExxonMobil, BP, Chevron, and Shell testify at a hearing next month, along with leaders of the American Petroleum Institute, the oil industry's top lobbying group, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We are deeply concerned that the fossil fuel industry has reaped massive profits for decades while contributing to climate change that is devastating American communities, costing taxpayers billions of dollars, and ravaging the natural world, Oversight Chairwoman Carolyn Maloney, Democrat New York, and Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat California, wrote in a letter to oil executives. We are also concerned that to protect those profits, the industry has reportedly led a coordinated effort to spread disinformation to mislead the public and prevent crucial action to address climate change, they wrote. Khanna, chairman of Oversight's Environment Subcommittee, has been pressing the oil industry for months for documents and other information on its role in stopping climate action. Khanna has been focusing on Exxon after a senior lobbyist for the company was caught in a secret video bragging that Exxon had fought climate science through shadow groups and had targeted influential senators in an effort to weaken President Joe Biden's climate agenda, including a bipartisan infrastructure bill and a massive $3.5 trillion spending bill currently moving through Congress. Washington-based lobbyist Keith McCoy also dismissed Exxon's public expressions of support for a proposed carbon tax on fossil fuel emissions as a talking point. McCoy's comments were made public in June by the environmental group Greenpeace UK, which secretly recorded McCoy and another lobbyist in Zoom interviews. Darren Woods, Exxon's chairman and chief executive, condemned McCoy's statements and said the company stands by its commitment to work on finding solutions to climate change. Woods is among the executives the House panel hopes to question at an October 28th hearing, along with BP America CEO David Lawler, Chevron CEO Michael Wirth, and Shell President Gretchen Watkins. The committee also has said it will formally question McCoy about his comments, although timing of that interview has not been set. Maloney and Khanna said in a statement that ExxonMobil and other oil companies have worked to prevent serious action on global warming by generating doubt about the documented dangers of fossil fuels and misrepresenting the scale of their efforts to develop alternative energy technologies. They compared the tactics to those deployed by the tobacco industry to resist regulation while selling products that kill hundreds of thousands of Americans. The oil industry's strategies of obfuscation and distraction span decades and still continue today, Khanna and Maloney said. The five largest publicly traded oil and gas companies reportedly spent at least $1 billion from 2015 to 2018 to promote climate disinformation through branding and lobbying, the lawmakers wrote.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, September 17th, 2021. City's Regeneron supply will run out today. Odessa's supply of Regeneron is expected to run out by the end of the week, and local health officials on Thursday acknowledged they don't know when additional shipments will arrive. The popular Regeneron treatment, which boosts the immune system's ability to fight COVID-19 and helps prevent people from being hospitalized, has proven very successful. Odessa Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Rod Huber said during a Thursday Zoom news conference with local health officials. The problem is demand for Regeneron has outpaced the ability to supply communities with it, Huber said. Odessa has been treating 50 to 60 people per day. Quote, we're very concerned, like a lot of cities, end quote, Huber said. Quote, we're not sure when we'll get our next shipment, end quote. Odessa this week received a total of 132 doses of Regeneron, donated from neighboring communities in order to keep the Odessa Regeneron Infusion Center open through the week, Huber said. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief of Staff Dr. Rohith Saravanan said the two-dose Regeneron treatment has significantly decreased local hospitalization rates, but he urged more people to get vaccinated also. Quote, there's a big difference in cost, end quote, Saravanan said. Quote, a two-dose cocktail of Regeneron costs about $1,250. A COVID vaccine, which prevents COVID, only costs $20, and we have an excessive supply of vaccine, end quote. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin on Thursday reported a total of 88 COVID patients at MCH, with 3 in pediatrics. 28 of those patients were in critical care, and 27 of those were on ventilators. Of the 28 patients in critical care, 24 were unvaccinated. Of the 60 patients not in critical care, 46 were unvaccinated, 11 vaccinated, and 3 were unknown. Patients' ages range from 2 months old to 92 years old, Tippin said. ORMC CEO Stacey Brown said there were a total of 23 COVID patients at ORMC on Thursday, with 17 patients in critical care and 8 on ventilators. Local officials expressed hope that the FDA today will approve the Pfizer booster. If approved, the booster could be made available to the general public as early as September 20th, Sarah Vannon said. Tippin and Brown on Thursday expressed their gratitude to the Odessa City Council, which unanimously voted this week to distribute American Rescue Plan Act funds to both hospitals. Council approved $3 million for MCH and $1 million to ORMC. The city funding is basically a paper transaction, because both hospitals have technically already spent the money to hire more nurses and staff to help care for the additional patient loads due to COVID, Tippin and Brown said. MCH and ORMC must provide proof that the funds were spent on staffing by a December 31st deadline, which will allow the city to be reimbursed those funds by the federal government. Tippin and Brown said 2 months ago that they made similar funding requests to Ector County, which also received American Rescue Plan Act funds. County commissioners have so far ignored the requests and have not discussed what they plan to do with their pot of money. MCH requested $4.2 million from the county, ORMC $2.6 million. Quote, we've had no response yet from the county, end quote, Brown said. Educator brings figurine collection to public. Figuring out the past, the transcendent embodiment of ancient Mexican art, is now on display at the Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery at the University of Texas Permian Basin. Owned by Ector County ISD Chief Innovation Officer Jason Osborne, it includes about 100 clay figures. They will be on display through November 4th. Gallery Director Amy Kim wrote in a booklet about the exhibit that it mainly consists of two groups of artwork. Selections from the early formative period, 1200 to 900 BCE, artworks from and influenced by Tlatelolco, now Mexico City, and works from West Mexico, 300 BCE to 350 CE. Associate Professor of Art Chris Stanley, who is also a member of the ECISD Board of Trustees, brought some of his students to view the artifacts and ask questions of Osborne. Quote, he's what we call a polymath, so his intelligence is in so many different areas. He was hired by our school district to help us move into the 21st century. He's fascinated with everything, end quote, Stanley said. One of the things Osborne does is collect things like art and tools. Quote, from what I know of this, he became just absolutely fixated with these cultures that are kind of forgotten, end quote, Stanley said. The late actor Vincent Price owned some of these figures and allowed them to be used in ads for Kahlua coffee liqueur. People thought if Price liked the artifacts, they would like to have them, too, Stanley said. Quote, the more popular an artifact is and the more available they are, the more people are going to want it. And then along with that came forgeries, end quote, Stanley said. Osborne said forgers would try to imitate mineral blooms on the clay, so museums would have to have experts who could determine if it was real or fake. When he first moved to Texas, Osborne said he was intrigued with Mexico because he'd never lived this close to it before. Quote, at the time, I'd never been in Mexico, so I was very curious because ever since I was very little, I was very curious about anthropology and paleontology and in just research in general. Not long after coming to Texas, I had access to an 800,000-acre ranch in North Mexico in the Chihuahuan Mountains. A lot of it was unexplored, untouched. There's multiple goat ranches up in this property, so I was up in these mountains and saw undocumented petroglyphs and things that are still in place from thousands of years ago. I started to do more and more and more research in Mexico and was really interested in some of the earliest civilizations, some of which is what you see here in this display, and these tombs and shaft tomb art pieces. Every single piece that's in here came from either a tomb or a shaft tomb, two different things. You think of a tomb or a grave as an open pit area covered versus a shaft tomb, which is down into shaft, end quote, Osborne said. Egyptian tombs were similar, and they existed in two different parts of the world. Quote, but they were thinking the same way. And you know what works in our human mind? What works in our human mind in unison is pretty fascinating, even to the tools that they would use, end quote, Osborne added. From a research standpoint, Osborne said he was interested in the genetic traits of the art itself and the people that live in these areas today. Quote, the only thing left to study is the pieces themselves and what they have left behind, end quote, he added. As pieces gained popularity, Hollywood started picking up some of these pieces back in the 50s. As a result of demand, there were more tomb raids in Mexico. Quote, it was legal to continue this process, and we were able to do this process all the way up to about 1973, when the UNESCO agreement happened, end quote, Osborne said. Quote, every piece that's in here is within the UNESCO agreement. They were all collected and they were all curated, most of them prior to 1960 or more in the 50s and 60s. That was another thing that I really made sure is the provenance of the pieces were legal to be obtained and there was documentation of it. And then I can bring it and pull it together to educate people, end quote, he added. Quote, this is history. It's a history lesson, end quote, Osborne said. Osborne said he has done a lot of work in paleontology and has always been interested in finding things and discovery. In his job with ECISD, Osborne said he pays a lot of attention to tomorrow's education. What can be done to promote tomorrow's careers and how they can partner with people outside the district to give students opportunities that will ultimately set them up for success. Quote, we believe that innovation approach or innovative approach to how we do education, end quote, Osborne said. Quote, I spent a lot of time researching and thinking of new ways of bringing really good things to students to get them excited about education. We recently started with a neuroscience course where kids are in virtual reality. We are solving mysteries of the brain in partnership with 7 universities, end quote. He works with 26 universities, but 7 in just one classroom. Senior Ed O'Bannon, an art minor, said seeing the figurines was interesting from an artistic and historical standpoint in the way it connects with anthropology and, quote, just the history of linking cultures and seeing how relevant it is today, some of the techniques that are still in use. I think it's pretty fascinating how some things are timeless, especially in art and history, has a way of repeating itself, end quote, O'Bannon said. Jonathan Polanis, a UTPB senior, said he liked the physical features of the figurines, quote, like the eyes and how slanted they were, end quote. Quote, strangely enough, I like to look at some of these ancient artifacts from other cultures, and I've seen the Mayan personally, the Aztec temples personally, and some of those shapes of the heads really got me interested in how elongated they were, end quote, Polanis said. Iris Fierro, director of student success, is auditing Stanley's ceramics class. Quote, it's nice to hear the perspective from Mr. Osborne and getting the background, end quote, Fierro said. Quote, I think it just makes the works of art a lot more meaningful. At the same time, we are a ceramics class here from non-art students, and I think having already been in the process of working with ceramics and learning the different techniques, I look at this with a completely different set of eyes. It's not my first exhibit to see ceramic pieces, but I think that having gone through this class and also getting the personal experience of hearing Mr. Osborne is more meaningful, end quote. Osborne said he acquired the pieces mostly through auction houses and trying to piece them together for a more curated collection that, quote, had more meaning than just random pieces, so it's very concentrated, end quote. Having it at the Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery, he said, is an ideal opportunity to put the collection in front of students and the community. When he was in paleontology, Osborne said, so often things were buried and put away in archives and people never got a chance to see them and touch them. Quote, so having an opportunity to do that is huge, and having a firm belief in education and an understanding of our world, it's a great opportunity, end quote, he added. ECISD COVID protocols unchanged. Despite President Joe Biden's executive order on COVID vaccines and testing, nothing has changed in regard to Ector County ISD students and staff members. Governor Greg Abbott has also issued an executive order forbidding mask mandates, which is being litigated in the courts. Quote, we are continuing to monitor decisions that are made at the state and federal level. But as of today, there are no changes in our protocols, end quote. Superintendent Scott Murray said in his media call Wednesday. Quote, our high was about 110 cases in one day. That was a very large number of cases between students and staff members. Last week, we started seeing numbers in the upper 40s, 50s, and 60s. So we saw a little bit of a decline. This week, we've seen numbers in the 30s, but primarily this week, it is because we are not able to conduct tests right now, end quote, Murray said. Quote, our new tests have not arrived from the state yet, and the tests we were using have now expired. We cannot use them anymore, and we know because we have been testing students and staff members every single day at school. Our inability to do that right now has resulted in lower test numbers. The numbers that we are receiving come from local doctors and families that are getting tested. Then they report those to the individual schools. Once we have testing equipment back in place, I'll be very curious to see, end quote. But the decline in numbers is good news, Marie said. The tests expired over the weekend. The district had anticipated that and had already placed an order. Quote, the state has millions of tests available. We are just waiting on that shipment, much like other districts across the state. There are over 800 districts in Texas that are using these tests, so we're all waiting on those next shipments, end quote, Murray said. On a different subject, Murray said opportunity culture now exists in 17 schools throughout ECISD. Texas Tech University conducted an evaluation of the program and presented their findings to the ECISD Board of Trustees Tuesday night. Quote, we will continue to expand that program so that more of our students have access to great teachers, and then more of our teachers have access to outstanding coaching opportunities from their peers, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we appreciate the investment that Texas Tech has made in this effort and appreciate the work of our teachers and all of those individuals that are involved in our opportunity culture program, end quote. Murray also asked for parents' help on meals. The district provides free breakfast and lunch to all students every day, but needs the information to continue the practice. He noted that significant state and federal funding also is attached. Quote, it is that time of year which we are gathering our free and reduced lunch forms, as well as income surveys. For our elementary students, we are asking all of our families to submit a very simple to complete income survey. And our middle school and high school students, those families that qualify for free and reduced lunch, we're asking that you submit those forms, end quote, Murray said. He noted that ECISD provides a free meal for everyone. However, quote, in order for us to continue to do that for every child in ECISD, we need to collect that information from all of our families, end quote. Quote, many of the dollars that we receive are specifically tied to our students, 56% of which normally qualify as economically disadvantaged. And in order for us to receive funding for those students, we need to know who they are and how many of those students we have. This income survey is the only way that we have of understanding how many of our families, specifically our students, would qualify for that programming, end quote, Murray added. As an incentive for middle school and high school students to make sure those forms are submitted, a random drawing will be conducted at each of middle school and high school where students can win a new MacBook Air. On another topic, Midland ISD on Wednesday issued a news release warning students not to take a TikTok challenge that involves stealing items from campuses, such as soap dispensers. Murray said he was unaware of the MISD announcement and of this particular TikTok challenge. He added that being familiar with TikTok, he knows there are many challenges on it and they are, quote, dangerous to children. So I would certainly encourage any of our students that are using TikTok to fully understand when you watch those videos and see those challenges, you make sure that you're making decisions that are for your own safety and health concerns. Certainly keep all of that in mind, and if we have any students that are stealing any kind of item from campus, of course those are criminal offenses, and we wouldn't want any of our students to end up dealing with criminal charges because of that kind of behavior, end quote, Murray said. National Merit Semifinalist among recognized ECISD students. Ector County ISD has announced a total of 19 students have been recognized by the College Board for their academic achievement, including Odessa High School senior Akshath Makura, who earned National Merit Scholarship semifinalist honors. He will continue in the National Merit Scholarship competition. About 16,000 of the 1.5 million students who enter the NMS program qualify as semifinalists. Quote, we are so proud of Akshath for qualifying as a semifinalist for the National Merit Scholarship, end quote. ECISD Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Lilia Nanez, said in a news release, quote, millions of students in thousands of schools take the preliminary SAT and National Merit Scholarship qualifying test. As a semifinalist, Akshath represents less than 1% of the nation's top academically talented high school students, end quote. Quote, ECISD congratulates Akshath and all of our recognized students for reaching such a prestigious level of achievement, end quote. The College Board offers several other recognition programs that grant academic honors students can include on college and scholarship applications. Colleges use these honors to identify students from underrepresented groups who have excelled on their PSAT, NMSQT, PSA-10, or AP exams, and in their classrooms. Those are National Rural and Small Town Designated Scholar, Maxine Flores, OHS. National Rural and Small Town National Hispanic Designated Scholar, Nisabella Carace, New Tech Odessa. Anastasio Pando, Elaine Brito, Marissa Rodriguez, Melanie Koss, Rigoberto Mendoza, Sebastian Ramirez, and Viviana Stentillen, OHS. Allison Blund, Angel Luna, J.C. Anglin, Joaquin Armendariz, Madeline Ramirez, Noe Rodriguez, and Nydia Brito, Permian High School. National Rural and Small Town National Hispanic National Indigenous Designated Scholar, Julia Sines, OHS. National Rural and Small Town National Hispanic African American Designated Scholar, Sarah Abera, PHS. Quick Hits. Rock the Pumpkin. Odessa First Assembly, 1101 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled Rock the Pumpkin from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. October 31st. There will be free food, free games, free candy, prizes, and a cakewalk. This is a free, family-friendly event. Visit tinyurl.com/4ZBBZE8V. COVID Vaccine Clinic Set. The City of Odessa, the University of Texas Permian Basin, and the Ector County Health Department have announced a COVID-19 vaccination clinic. The clinic will begin September 21st and will be open Tuesdays through Fridays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the UTPB Soccer Complex parking lot. Drivers are asked to not line up on the Highway 191 frontage road. First and second shots will be offered. Third shots will be available for those who have passed the 8-month threshold, unless a doctor's note is provided. Information on booster shots is subject to change in accordance with CDC guidelines. The vaccination clinic is open to the public. 500 vaccines will be given each day. No appointment or pre-registration is needed. Both Pfizer and Moderna will be available. Some things to bring. Vaccination card. Wait times are expected to increase without vaccination card. Driver's license. Local news roundup. Kingfish Ingram to perform at the Ector. Grammy-nominated blues sensation Chris Stone Kingfish Ingram will celebrate the release of his second Alligator Records album, 662, which debuted at number one on the Billboard Blues chart, with a performance at 6 p.m. September 29th at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Tickets are $25.37, $64.57. Visit www.theector.com or call 432-227-0103. 662 is named for the area code of Clarksdale and much of the Mississippi Delta. The news release said it is a powerful and personal album and a fiery coming-of-age record. Since his debut, Ingram has become an even more thrilling and impactful guitarist and a more soulful and nuanced singer. Plus, for 662, he co-wrote 12 songs and the bonus track, a pine to his recently deceased mother, Princess Pride, the release said. Live performance. Rob Schneider is scheduled to perform live September Saturday at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7 p.m. All ages show. For tickets or more information, visit theector.com. Annual Harvest Moon. The Alpine Downtown Association and the City of Alpine will celebrate the end of summer with music and art under the 4th Annual Harvest Moon event, Saturday evening in downtown Alpine. The event will start from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. with an Alpine Alley art reception featuring new murals. There will be music and mural arts-related project awareness. Galleries, shops, and restaurants will be open into the evening. For more information, call Jim Street at 432-386-2780. Garden Grants. The Texas Farm Bureau is offering $500 grants to help schools establish or improve gardens or greenhouses. Aquaponic and hydroponic systems are eligible if they are used to teach students about food production. Get the details at https://txfb.us/gardengrant21. Apply by noon, October 22nd. https://txfb.us/gardengrantapply21. For more information on how to start and keep a garden going and how it aligns with TEKS, attend the virtual webinar on Tuesday. Learn more, https://txfb.us/VTAA Gardens. Local News Roundup. Odessa woman dies in rollover. A 37-year-old Odessa woman reportedly died in a single vehicle rollover north of Odessa. The reported fatal rollover happened at 4:18 p.m. September 14th on JBS Parkway, 1 mile north of Odessa, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Tara D. Crossland, 37, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2021 Dodge Challenger southwest on JBS Parkway. The Challenger approached a curve in the roadway, left the roadway, and rolled. Medical examiner Carl Rogers pronounced Crossland dead at the scene, the press release detailed. Crossland wasn't wearing her seatbelt. Kermit man dies in two-vehicle collision. A 32-year-old Kermit man died in a two-vehicle collision west of Odessa. The reported fatal collision happened at 10:10 p.m. September 12th, about 16 miles west of Odessa on State Highway 302, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Octavia N. Petty, 18, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2003 Buick west on State Highway 302, while Rodolfo Lopez Ramirez, 32, of Kermit, was driving east on State Highway 302 in a 2008 Dodge Durango. The Buick failed to drive in a single lane, crossed the center median, and collided with the Durango head-on, the affidavit stated. Petty was transported to Medical Center Hospital with incapacitating injuries, while Lopez Ramirez was also transported to Medical Center Hospital, where he was pronounced dead by Dr. Shipke. Petty was wearing a seatbelt, while Lopez Ramirez wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Obituary. Bobby Joe Lightfoot Thomas. Odessa. Bobby Joe Lightfoot Thomas, age 85, went peacefully into the arms of Jesus Tuesday, September 14, 2021, in Odessa, with family at her side. Bobby was preceded in death by her husband, Everett R. Thomas, parents C.K. and Mabel Dottie Lightfoot, sister Nell Lightfoot, brothers Richard, Kenneth, and Bill Lightfoot, and grandson Tommy Thomas. She is survived by four children, Harold Q. Thomas, Terry, Janice Faye Havens, Wade, Ronald Thomas, Tricia, and Donald Thomas, Alicia. 11 grandchildren, Kenneth Thomas, Kimberly, Sarah Havens McMahon, Deshae Beavers, Ashley Cole, Stephen, Ryan Havens, Shara, Kyle Beavers, Stacy Monk, Connor, Brittany Hall, Timothy, Heather Anderson, Shaylee Walls, and Shelby Penn, Mac. 21 great-grandchildren, Aubrey Havens, Braxton Havens, Jackson Monk, Brantley Penn, Kinley Cole, Kaysen Thomas, Caden Hall, Yager Monk, Raleigh Anderson, Nova Beavers, Haven Penn, Allie Penn, Channing Havens, Kaylin Walls, Brecken Hall, Cannon Cole, Cashton Havens, Cullen Thomas, Adara McMahon, and Brielle and Bristol McMahon. It is only fitting that her funeral be at Chapel Hill Baptist Church, where the Christian family legacy began. She will be laid to rest at Pleasant Valley Cemetery next to her husband, Everett, and her grandson, Tommy. A visitation will be Friday, September 17th, 2021, from 5 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, September 18th, 2021, 10 o'clock a.m. at Chapel Hill Baptist Church, followed by burial at Pleasant Valley Cemetery in May, Texas. Death notices. Jolene K. Lloyd Thompson. Tulsa. Jolene K. Lloyd Thompson, 56, of Collinsville, Oklahoma, died Saturday, September 11th, 2021, in Tulsa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., September 20th, 2021, at Christ United Methodist Church, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Burial will follow at 12 p.m. at Ridgelawn Cemetery in Collinsville, Oklahoma. Reverend Bob Feast and Dr. Bob Mansfield is officiating. Arrangements are by Collinsville Dalton Funeral Home of Collinsville, Oklahoma, 918-371-2000. 2111. Jose Antonio Barron, Midland. Jose Antonio Barron, 65, of Midland, died Friday, September 10, 2021, in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. September 17, 2021, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Mr. Dolores G. Lolo Cervantes, Odessa. Mr. Dolores G. Lolo Cervantes, 77, died Wednesday, September 15, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Robert L. Gonzalez, Odessa. Robert L. Gonzalez, 70, died Monday, September 13, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.